Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
All right, everybody, welcome to Ringside Wrap. It is Wednesday night, February 1st, 8 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, going to be joined in a little while here by Les Thatcher, and Rich Tate is hiding behind the proverbial glass in the studio, and at least he gets to be home in the studio, the home studio, far better than what he's had to deal with the last few weeks, so good for Rich. And Les gets on, and I'm going to wait for Les to get on. He's going to be on shortly. But the biggest thing of the weekend, and it was an action-packed weekend when it came to big events taking place, the UFC on Fox on Saturday night, and the Royal Rumble taking place for WWE on Sunday, which, of course, led into Monday Night Raw. And the biggest story of the weekend, which is The Undertaker has returned, a long-rumored return, and I don't think it surprises anyone that he's going to be back for this year's WrestleMania. It's long been rumored that he was going to be going head up against Triple H, and that looks to be the case after Monday night. Now, it's just a matter of what happens in the next few months on how to get there. But the guy who has been arguably the MVP of the last four WrestleManias, well, I take that back, really is the MVP or co-MVP of the last four WrestleManias, back into it again with the one guy who last year had arguably the match of the year. For many people, it was the match of the year. But WWE's got something good at WrestleMania. When they have The Rock and John Cena and they have The Undertaker now in Triple H, it's going to be interesting to see what they have to do as far as drawing interest. Now, obviously, they're not going to have to do too much to draw interest. I think everyone is more than happy to see that matchup. But it's obviously the rumors of Shawn Michaels possibly being involved as a referee, as far as trying to build the drama and giving people a reason to believe that Triple H has got the ability to beat The Undertaker and that we're going to see The Undertaker's streak snapped. And Les is on. Actually, now, sorry, apparently I missed a cue from Rich, but Les is on. And Les, how are you doing tonight?
To go with the current policy here on this show, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all, I'm going to hit the mute button.
Ah, wait, you can't do that yet, because I know at least one good thing is another Undertaker Triple H match at WrestleMania.
Okay, so there's one thing. Now I can hit the mute button.
Well, Les, before we get to any of the other nonsense, and believe me, we will unfortunately have to get to some of this nonsense tonight, how do you get there? What do you need? I guess the biggest thing is, how do you build drama for The Undertaker as far as will the streak be snapped? And Shawn Michaels playing a role as far as being, you know, somehow involved, obviously would be the easiest and the most logical way to do it if you wanted to add something to it. But if you're WWE, do you automatically go with that, or do you wait and see if you even need to have Shawn Michaels involved?
I don't like that. I mean, in the least, really, which is neither here nor there. I don't know that you have to build anything, honestly. And truthfully, if you've been around a while, I don't think you see the Undertaker streak being ended anyway. I truthfully hope it's not. I don't care who his opponent happens to be, or, you know, I mean, can only go on for, obviously, for so long. The maybe the plus that I saw Monday night was Hunter patting him on the shoulder and walking away. And it's sort of perplexed the Undertaker as well. More importantly, it may have left those watching with a question, which is exciting, I think, in lieu of how that show is normally written. Because I say that because, to repeat myself, in this day and age, if you're a performer in this industry, your strongest weapon is the element of surprise. And I think it leaves a question is, because Hunter had said earlier to Laurinaitis that he realized that everybody in that position had let their personal issues affect the office. And again, maybe I'm overthinking this or actually looking for details where nobody else thought of details. Is him walking away like that is to say, well, you know, if I'm back in power, and I think you can sort of assume that he is, that I cannot, you know, I just said that I'm not going to let my personal feelings over, you know, rule my decisions. So my decision has to be to walk away. Now I think they have to decide how you change that. And The Undertaker is going to, you know, in some form, his pitch is, you know, okay, you can say that's what you're going to do, but you stood out here and said that you actually won in essence because I was carried out. Well, I think I deserve the right to prove you wrong. And at some point, maybe somebody else from behind the scenes steps out and says, it's time to, you know, to forego the policy, Hunter, and step into the ring. And again, I could be overthinking it. The one thing I did not like is last year, with no words, looking at the WrestleMania sign up on the ceiling, I thought was dramatic. This time I thought, okay, here we go, you know, somebody's playing the same film over again. You know,
yeah,
that
actually stood out to me too. And the reason I asked you about the Shawn Michaels thing is I know that's what everyone's going to be looking for. I know it's the most obvious thing, but the way the crowd reacted and the fact that Triple H has that card and that he played up the fact that, yeah, I may have lost that, but I won the war because you're the one who was dragged out never to be seen from again just till now. I don't think you don't have to do that. And I could be, I know I'm way overthinking this. You figure you want The Undertaker, if he wrestles one match a year, could probably do a few more of these, maybe at least. I don't know. I'm not living in his body, but he could probably do one next year, maybe the year after that. Why wouldn't you wait till you needed to do something else to build the drama where, and as dumb as this may sound, but, you know, gee, the pure sports build of seeing a rematch of the guy, you know, of the great fight, you can sell things like that too without, again, jumping, you know, to conclusions and going, okay, well, we got to have Shawn Michaels in there to bring up some sort of new element of drama. Sometimes you just let the drama be the drama.
Well, yeah, I think in that particular match, stipulations would too much. My career, your career, okay, and the stipulation worked. I think the match itself, the number of consecutive wins, lends itself to staying away from too much over planning. How many more can he do? Well, I don't know, unless Ricky Steamboat or Ric Flair or Jack Briscoe or Terry Funk or somebody got young and resurrected, not too damn many, because the rest of that roster is not going to go out there. I mean, I can't see him leaving losing. Cena's never going to be in that spot because he can't lose. And I think Mark's earned the right to walk away, you know, with the record intact. And if he hasn't, then there is no justice.
Is there any way, realistically, he's most certainly will not do anything. I wouldn't think that he doesn't want to do, contract or no contract. Do you even think they ever even approach him with that? I mean, is someone that crazy to do that? Because why would you do that?
Well, you know, he may feel, at some point, he himself may feel some sort of obligation to Vince personally. But then I think that company should feel a bigger obligation to him. There's nobody else in that company that even comes close right at this point in time to what he's done. And when I say that, Mark's not the greatest mechanical worker, but realize how many years they've repackaged and resurrected this particular man. But more importantly, maybe he's the most technically sound in terms of he understands his limitations, his strengths, plays to both, against the limitations to the strengths. He's all about psychology, storytelling, and building to something. And so that would eliminate 9/10 of the current roster, or maybe even the future roster. So I don't know. It'll be interesting, but I don't see the. My only story is here, if I'm involved, is to reinforce the fact that what Hunter said, that you were carried out, so I in essence won the battle, and to leave it at that. I think if you start with stipulations and why. Why would you put Michaels in as a referee? Why would you have to even have a special referee in this case? I don't know, and I don't. I won't say that they won't, because common sense, logic, and that is not really part of the writing credo of this company. But I don't see any need for it or any value. I think again the streak itself and who's. Who the man is, and part of this, they can't. I don't know that they should be able to see it. Part of Rock's strength has been that he's not there all the time. Part of the Undertaker's strength that he's not overdone, and everybody else is, virtually past that has been overdone to death. And so you don't want to, you don't want to do too much. You should leave the match itself. And why you're having the match, in terms of the streak, should be all that's necessary. Of course, that's not to say that that's how it'll play out. But again, that's what I would do. I wouldn't put in a lot of stipulations or anything else.
For everyone listening, and one thing I didn't mention at the top of the show is from Rock Hawk King, the new closely affiliated Indian-based promotion with TNA. In Ring of Honor, wrestler Jimmy Reid is going to be on at about 8:30. I was looking at what the WrestleMania lineup would look to be. Obviously, Cena, Rock, Undertaker, Triple H, and probably Jericho, Punk. Obviously, they can use WrestleMania to get by the entire year if they really had to. But are they lulled into a false sense of security because you have, again, three great matches with six guys who, deserve to be where they're going to be, but are they being lulled into a false sense of security again? Because even though they're able to have Triple H and Jericho and Undertaker and The Rock this time around, they're not going to be able to continue to do this. And again, they don't seem to be doing anything to build towards a bigger future. Obviously, now Sheamus is playing somewhat in the mix now, but do you get a feeling of a false sense of security? Because at some point, these guys aren't going to be there, and then what?
I would think so. I've said all along, if they, I think they're booking this mic the way they want people to perceive it. To them, I have not talked to anybody in creative, but I think they're just them. It's a sense of entertainment. It's not about angles. It's not about heat. It's entertainment. So sky's the limit. I thought the numbers jumped, and again, something could prove me wrong here, but I think maybe the numbers jumped Monday night because a lot of those people didn't see the Rumble and were tuning in to find out who won and the result of that and what was going on to Mania. I mean, Mania is kind of like the Super Bowl. It's going to draw whether it's worth a damn or not. But I think the cartoon called the Royal Rumble and the subsequent semi-cartoon on Monday night shows the weakness and lack of depth of this roster, which is, I've been singing that song for a long time. It's not there. Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, let me start watching Punk and Laurinaitis at the opening segment. I saw one thing: no chemistry. I mean, Punk pushed the issue with na-na-na-na, goodbye, longer than had I been in his shoes, I would have. I mean, that's, you know, there's time to know when to bail out. don't bury yourself and dig a hole you've got to dig your way out of. And those people weren't interested. The other part is this is not Vince McMahon and Steve Austin in any way, shape, or form. There is no there's two guys reciting their lines, and we're watching. If you listen, the na-na-na-na goodbye thing was, without being prompted, came stronger with Hunter and Laurinaitis. But even more so when I heard John sing the praises of the chamber, I thought, okay, so there's two guys out of five that belong there. That's the weakest chamber that they've ever had, period. End of story. Jericho and Punk. Stop and think about the badasses that have been in that thing. Kane, Undertaker, Hunter, Batista, to name just a few. Here again, I don't mean to personally, demean any of the participants. It's not a personal issue. It's the way they're perceived and put over. Kofi has no business here. I love Kofi. Kofi's entertaining. He's a good kid. He works hard.
He's got a role.
Yes, but that is not it.
Yeah.
That is not it. I don't care. Ziggler is not the guy that you want him to be and everybody else wants him to be. He's not. Period. End of story.
Yeah, I think they with a couple exclamation points after Sunday night.
Yeah. Well, and Miz at one point built up to be a sneaky heel. But even a sneaky heel has at some point to be a vicious heel and confident. And that has not, the match on Monday night didn't do anything to solidify his position either. Killing's not, Ron is just, he's a funny guy that they turned, they made a cartoon, and now all of a sudden he's a vicious cartoon. Okay. So Wile E. Coyote was a vicious part of the Roadrunner. But I'm not frightened of him. It's just...
But that's
and
the biggest
again,
thing with me and The Miz. When that's my biggest thing with The Miz, and it's so laughable to go, and I know we've got to come up, we're coming up on a short break here, but I want to get this in. When people talk about The Miz's spray tan and flush cheeks and all that stuff, that you'd figure at some point that nobody's taken him seriously. They haven't booked him in a way to take him seriously. I mean, from last year's WrestleMania onward, he's just been treated like a schmuck. And it's, and Kofi's another one. He just, he could be more than he is. But obviously, they're not going to develop into, they're not going to give him a chance to do anything more than be a merchandise seller with the hand signal and everything. And fine, okay, he's got a role. But as you said, it's not in the Elimination Chamber. And it's just, booking is a very TNA thing to do. And again, I know the Elimination Chamber was really cool when it started. It's a really cool looking thing, and I'm sure it sold a lot of, toys during the holidays. But, booking to have a pay-per-view because it's got a theme is just, I don't know, it's crazy to me. But I know Rich is going to be driven crazy here if I don't throw it to the break here. And we'll get back to the Royal Rumble and talk about the UFC on Fox 2, which in its own way was quite disappointing as well. But we'll do that when we come back.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie?
can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
I'm Glass in the studio, and Les, how many times do you think Rich went out looking for a long, tall Sally, but ended up with a little Richard instead?
I don't know. are you trying to get him to chime in? Is that what you're?
There's a little bait here and there, just to tweak him. But
you know what I think he's doing, Mike. He's actually looking for a job with WWE. So figures if he doesn't say what he thinks that. He can join the masses that work for them that don't say what they think and get paid for it.
Adam Summers and I, obviously the Wrestling Observer Newsletter awards came out, and I think you talked about him a little bit with Vic this past weekend. And obviously it's been all the talk of the Wrestling Observer website and forums and all that sort of stuff. But Adam and I do basically show, or he uses Japanese wrestling, but we talked about a lot of different things, and we just kind of talking about promotion of the year and all the gatos blow up around it and people debating it, and Bruce Mitchell and Dave and everybody getting upset with Dave because of how people voted and yeah, yeah, yeah. We were just talking about, you know, obviously if it goes off dollars, of course WWE is going to win, and Ring of Honor wins the thing, and I don't know why. Honestly, the promotion of the year is probably New Japan, but nobody knows who they are, so I really can't blame them there. But because we're familiar with New Japan, we're just kind of talking about, you know, how they laid the groundwork to the future. And even though the company was on death's door, they rehabbed their dojo, and they closed the doors to foreigners and anyone, you know, screwing up how they would do business in the traditional way they built guys and built stars and sending them off to quote-unquote learning excursions like they used to do. Calgary, obviously, was Bestu Hart, but they do it in Mexico now because they can, and into TNA a little bit and things like that. But they went back and they did the pro wrestling business thing that made them successful and made all pro wrestling promotions successful, and they are rebuilding faith in their fan base, and they've got core fans back and because people believed in them again. And they're cultivating for the future. And unfortunately, you know, WWE, yeah, they're going to win as far as dollars go. But realistically, at the end of the day, you know, 10 years from now, as you've talked about with Dragon Gate, and is you're completely correct when it comes to promotions like that, yeah, WWE is going to always make money, probably, and they're always going to be there. But are they turning themselves into Cirque du Soleil or Barnum and Bailey, like even more than they were accused of doing in 1984? Are they getting to the point where people are going to buy WrestleMania? They might go see a show if it comes around, but at best it's only going to be once a year, and then they're not going to invest in anything else. It's not like they're going to buy merchandise or this or that or the other. Are they going to be a pure, hey, the Harlem Globetrotters are here. Look, we bought a basketball when we went to the show. Then you don't think about them again for a year. Is that possible?
Yeah, I think it's very possible. Well, you know, here's the thing. I think anybody that actually believes there's not a tremendously good wrestling product out there today anyway, period. And that's across the board. You mentioned Dave and our friends Dave and Brian who grade on the curve because the product is what it is. I think they and Rich have been talking. Seriously, I listen to them, them talk about some things. I think, God, did they see the same thing I've seen? I don't think so. At least not realistically. The one thing I heard them talking about, and Lance and I emailed back and forth about, is Ring of Honor has a strong thing of not knowing when to say when. You know, it's like having sex and everybody climax and you continue to pump on. It's just we got to get our shit in. And, one of the things that made people like Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Ricky Steamboat, Harley Race, Buddy Rogers great is knowing when to shut it down. And we talk about the dying art. That's not necessarily something you teach. It's something that went back with Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton, knowing when to tag Robert Gibson, when enough selling is enough selling, when if we take it another minute, we're going to start losing these people. And that's one of the things that I see in Ring of Honor. Too much so is we're getting, we should have ended this match 5 minutes ago. And we didn't.
Yeah. It's what killed the final battle. And Dave was very upset with people that had a problem with that. I don't want to say very upset. I don't want to speak for Meltzer. But he was a little perturbed with how people thought about it. But, there were a lot of people that probably thought the same way I did, where it's like, oh, God, it's now 11 o'clock. They're going to go 40 minutes. They should go 20 minutes really hard, but they're going to go 40, and they got a dead crowd already. And damned if that wasn't, that was the biggest problem with that match. And I think that's...
Well, it's like what Bob said last week, when he said, I agree with Les, we need to get Eddie Edwards into UFC where he can stand and take 10,000 Muay Thai kicks and not go down. And so then the guy kicking him, Bones Jones will finally end up being so tired he won't be able to stand up and throw another kick, and then Eddie will just cover him. No, it's unreal. I mean, that's the thing. It's, I see young guys that I think thought, had a lot of potential as professional wrestlers, and they are potentially professional entertainers, but there's a difference. And that's, I'm not, I'm not looking for professional entertainers. I watch Justified for professional entertainers. I don't need to watch wrestling for that. It's just, I'm going to give you another example. Everybody's singing this song about Punk and Daniel Bryan Monday night. It was a good match. That's the end of it. It was a good match. It wasn't outstanding. It wasn't 4-star. It wasn't what I would expect from these two guys. It was just a good match. But if you haven't seen a good match in a while, then I guess it was phenomenal. But this was not Benoit and Regal. It was not Taker and Helmsley. It was not Taker and Michaels. Not even close. And what I wish they would have done here from a wrestling standpoint, psychology-wise, they established a story at the beginning of this, earlier in the show, that they knew each other. They've been longtime friends. Okay. Well, the Patriots and the Giants know each other. They've played each other several times. And on Sunday, I don't think they're going to grab a headlock and start running spots because they're going to come out because they know each other's offense and defense. those two teams could come out and try to feel each other out and see where the other guy, because they're figuring on the other guy changing his offense or his defense, because we do know what they're doing. These two guys, had I have been the agent in that match, I would have wanted them to come out, lockups, bull, you know, go in the ropes, break, lock up, bull, go in the ropes and break, maybe then switch, take down, hook in behind, sit out, come up to a new, you know. And what I'm talking about, I don't mean for 10 minutes, I don't mean for 15, I mean for 2 minutes, 3 minutes, establish that I've got to be careful. This guy knows my technique. And the other, you know, both guys establish this. And then at some point, one of them finds an opening, and then they, you know, start moving along. It was a good match. It was not four-star. You know, it wasn't everyone's writing about, you know, I expected better from them.
Well, that's how star people are, you know, for things. And actually, you know, the guy who's starving right now is Jimmy Rave, who's actually on the line with us. And when we get back, we're going to be talking to Jimmy about a lot of different things, including his match at ROH Final Battle and the new promotion, Ring Ka Kang, affiliated with TNA. But we're going to get to Jimmy when we come back from break.
This is Paul Stanley from Kiss for Rad, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Some of us work months producing a CD, but in less time than it takes to play it, someone will be killed in an alcohol-related crash. So please don't drive when you've been drinking. Plan ahead. Arrange a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard, ride a bike, or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
And be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
At letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hello there, I'm Leanne Womack. There's so much that kids have to be good at these days. It's hard to think ahead and realize how something like learning music can help them. Music helps kids because it's a performing art, and performing well is something that children need to learn to take part in society. Getting an 85% on a math test is pretty good, but hitting 85% of the notes in a song during a concert isn't good enough for most music students or their teachers. The kind of practice and preparation that goes into the discipline of performing music helps kids develop habits that will allow them to perform better in all areas of their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. March is Music in Our Schools Month. Music, part of a sound education.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
I present to you three of the fiercest subjects ever assembled in the Cage of Doom. First, the brain-wrenching behemoth Algebra 2, weighing in at a mind-boggling 800 pounds. Foreign languages! The multilingual international sensation capable of tossing you clear across the Atlantic. And finally, biology.
more ferocious than formaldehyde, she'll dissect you one chromosome at a time. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Me too.
I'm in.
Sign me up.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college. Find out which classes you need at knowhowtogo.org.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation for Education, and the Ag Council.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary, fine of the dawn. He cleaned me out the music, but he had a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Have me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, no sauce, that cheap. Be a sweet guy. Everything that Uncle John need. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Have me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, the song of the John with Paul S. Tyler. He saw Mary coming and he just like an alley. Oh, baby. Yes, baby.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap. Mike Sempervivi and Les Thatcher, and that's what I get for taking a poke at Rich behind the glass producing. He breaks out Long Tall Sally. But our guest at this time, from the new Rock Hawk King promotion, affiliated with TNA, taking place in India, and last seen on my TV at least, at ROH Final Battle, it's a pleasure to welcome back onto the show Mr. Jimmy Rave. Jimmy, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Pretty well, man.
Are you live from India, Jimmy?
No, I got back Friday.
All right. Good.
Yeah. I think my body's still there. My head's here.
Well,
I'm interested in how slowly they're starting with just basic stuff, because when I say this, my first thought is India is pure in wrestling terms, and if you're going in with all the glitz and goo-goo and gaga and nonsense that's the current product in this country, then you've already run through 10 years. And I think if you just start, if you set the clock at 1975 and start, it should be a strong promotion.
Right. Well, we didn't know what we were getting into until after that first night. And after the first night, everybody was just like, you know, telling each other, like, don't do anything. You know what I mean? Like, no false finishes, you know, like, no kickouts, you know, like, you know, a lot of our matches are, you know, come back and let's go home, you know? So,
yeah.
I mean, like, it's just been an amazing thing to be a part of. And have you guys seen the Steiner videos online where the crowd was running from him and,
I saw this. You know where Steiner went into the audience?
Yeah.
You know, I said to somebody earlier today about that. I said, if that were Raw or Impact, then the audience would have been waving at the camera and laughing because they would have found it humorous. But what I saw there was the original Sheik, Eddie Fairhot, because back, you know, when he went out and when he started for the dress room, the crowds parted like the dead, you know, like the sea, because they legitimately believed he was that crazy.
And the thing about it is, I think in the United States we're so like, hey, if you touch me, I'll sue you. You know what I mean? And you know, they didn't know what to expect from him. Like, Scott's, you know, like an intimidating dude. Like, when you're standing next to him, and then like he was such money over there. Like, everybody was just really, really, really on. And so all the matches were, you know, really good. Everything got over like it was supposed to. And it was just an amazing experience. And especially since we did 26 episodes in just 2 weeks and, you know, got all that stuff done. And, you know, we went to on media days and went to one of our sponsors, an automobile company called Tata. We went to their plant was just like bombarded with workers and then media started showing up there, and it was just an insane you know, whole experience.
Jimmy, how are you approached for this? Because obviously we know that the TNA names and David Lagana, obviously, and Dutch Mantel no longer, you know, works for TNA, but you know, their, you know, involvement in it. But then they, you know, they're using you and Harry Smith and Chavo Guerrero Jr. and cheerleader Melissa and some other people as well. How were you contacted to be a part of this thing? And was there any hesitation in your mind or anything like that leading into it?
I was actually contacted by Dutch, and it was one of those things where Sanjay Dutt is like one of my closest friends, and so I kind of knew something was going on, but, you know, like, I've just learned over the years in wrestling, like, you know, it's nothing until it's something, you know? So then when they started asking me for my, you know, passport, his visa's done, and, you know, they had dates and, you know, everything, it moved all really fast. Really, really fast, you know, and but I had been aware of it for a while, you know. When I wrestled Kyle Matthews at the Impact, I had already known that I'd already been signed up for this.
Okay.
But like, you know, I have a good relationship with Jeff and Dutch and Savio and those guys, and so, like, you know, it was just you know, they felt like that, you know, we needed to go over there and make some stars out of Indians, and, you know, I kind of find that it's easy for me to help get guys over and still kind of keep my heat too, you know.
Well, and it sounds like a relatively daunting task that it's got 26 episodes done in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I'm thinking, have you ever had to walk into anything like that? I mean, you know, as far as the organization and everything went, I mean, was it just kind of, you know, they said, boom, boom, you know, you're going to be here, it's this guy, or how did it all work out and come to pass? Because, boy, it doesn't seem like they had a whole lot of time and room for error.
I know they all sat down and did the creative process together and had a really good idea of what was going to happen when, you know, going into everything. This past tour, you know, like, the main focus was to make sure the Indian guys were, you know, well established for the end of that season, you know. So so I was able to go over there and help do some training with the Indian guys, and that, you know, that was a very rewarding thing for me, because, like, they were so focused on, you know, the creative process, that, you know, I felt like there were some things lacking from the Indian guys. When we got there, the first tour, they'd only been in training for 48 days.
Wow.
That's, you know, that was the first thing I heard about. So I don't know who had seen the first episode, said the Indians are bad. I said, of course they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gonna stay that way. Because you can't make wrestlers that quick. You just can't. That would, you know, my only problem, but would I do something different? Absolutely. I think in that country, if you're watching a wrestling show, whether you're an expert at it or not, you can tell when somebody's in over their head. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, in that country, I think it would be more important to get a guy ready and have him put him out there looking good rather than just putting him out there. That would be my shortcoming, mm-hmm. if there is one, and I haven't seen a show, so I can't say that I'm hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to have that with any, you know, I mean, we can make the same excuse about guys on WWE or TNA not ready for the position that they're in, you know. We just were given something to work with and, you know, did. I thought we did really well with, you know, what we were given, especially, you know, knowing that these guys had only been, you know, training less than 2 months at a time.
Well, see, this tag team champions of Chavo Guerrero Jr. and Harry Smith aren't too bad. and what, as far as I know, the Colors Network, I'm in an area where there is actually a pretty big Indian population. So, you know, like a lot of direct TVs and cable channels, where you have the ability to buy packages. And I believe, mm-hmm. one of them has Colors. And I know, at least in some markets, I know in Detroit and places like that where there is a high Indian, you know, a heavy concentrated Indian population, that the show is going to be able to be seen, sometimes even over basic cable. What are we to look forward to out of, you know, who you're wrestling and some of the things maybe to for us to look out for if we get a chance to see the show?
Me and Zima Ion do a lot of tag stuff together, and I had a really, really good match with Sanjay this last go around, so it'll be later in the seasons. But I mean, they're just and there's some really good matches with like Chavo and Harry against some other guys, and it, you know, there's some guys that like there's a tag team from Vancouver called the Bollywood Boys, and they they're Indian, but they're from Canada, and you know, this was their big break, and man, they you know, gave them the ball and they scored every time. So hey, I mean, like, it's just a fun thing to watch, you know. Like, I was reading on Twitter earlier, and some people were kind of burying the show, and you know, others loved it, you know. But I started thinking, like, you know, what does it really matter? Because this isn't our target audience anyway, you know. Our audience is the people we're performing in front of in India, not somebody that knows the ins and outs of pro wrestling in the United States.
Did you get the feeling while you were over there that this is, you know, after the, obviously you got wrapped up with the taping, but as far as after that and the feedback you've gotten, are you confident that this is going to be something that continues to roll on and that you're, you know, it's going to be a, you know, that they're in it for the long haul sort of thing with these sponsors?
I can't say for sure because I don't know the sponsors, but you know, the people from Intermall who was financing the production and the college people, like, were ecstatic. 2 days into taping the first round, you know, we'd only taped like 4 or 5 episodes by then, and they were just like, this is amazing, you know? And then this last time, everything just went, you know, really smoothly. It would be hard for them not to want to do another one. You know, I just read the ratings. We got a 2.2, but I don't know how their rating system works over there.
Let me ask a question. Now, you talked about 26 episodes, television episodes. And of course, mm-hmm. Were they all taped in the same place, Jimmy, or were they moved to different locations?
It was all in the same place. It was a studio, much like Impact.
Uh-huh. Well, now, is the plan to start house shows in the major cities after this 26 episodes air, or somewhere into this? Is this just to establish, and then they're going to start touring like, you know, like WWE would here or TNA would here?
Well, we had a media day the first one, and I heard the colors and the Intermall people talking about, you know, how... You know, it's branded as another reality show for that network, and Colors is very huge in the reality TV world. And but they were saying like how different this would be from like a Big Brother or something, because they would be able to continue to make money, you know, by doing live events. And you know, we were turning away people by the third day in. Like, I think they had like 2,000 people try to enter by the third day in.
Good.
So I mean, it could be something that would, you know, be very successful, and Colors gets like 99% of the country too.
I don't know, you know, again, I haven't seen anything to make any comparisons, but I've heard that it's actually a show that comes across more logically and more sound than the Impact show does. And
I think it goes back to keeping it simple. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's you know, a lot of times in wrestling nowadays, people overcomplicate things or try to rush angles or, you know, like, with Jeff and Dutch's mind and Savio's and, you know, just, you know, like when I found out who was working on the show, I was like, there's no way this is not going to be great.
Can Sanjay Dutt still be a player from the Himalayas?
You get to go back to the tours?
Oh, what's that?
Oops, sorry, Les.
No, I was just saying, are you pretty well assured of going back if they decide to tour again, Jim?
I think so. I'm really hopeful that, you know, if they ask me to go back, I'd be more than willing to. And I know that I would like to. I kind of exchanged information with some of the Indian wrestlers, and you know, we're trying to continue to progress them. Like, as they're, you know, now they don't have anything to do. We just wrapped. So, I mean, like, it's one of those things where, you know, like, I'm so hopeful for it that, like, I don't want these guys to just kind of stop working hard. I mean, this is
right.
Huge for them. Like, you know, like this, you know, they are going to go from just guys that went on a tryout and to put an open casting call type thing into, you know, huge stars in their country. It's huge.
Now, ROH final battle. Oh, sorry, Les.
Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, the one thing that a lot of people had seen you in, they're listening last time around, was ROH final battle this past December, which, you know, had some ups and downs with the shows, but one of the things I really liked a lot was your match with Tommaso Ciampa, you know, playing off of when, I mean, a big fan of yours when you were in Ring of Honor with the Embassy. Not that I'm not a fan of yours now, but you know, I really loved what was taking place there then, and I thought you guys played off of it great in December, and for a show that I thought had some issues, you know, some in their control and some out of it. That was really a glowing thing, I thought. And, you know, how was it coming back, Rivera? How was it, you know, actually being on the cheer side of things and the whole nine yards? And just how did you feel after that match, too? Because I really thought it came across well on the pay-per-view.
I was so freaking tired. I left India at 3 a.m. on December 23rd. And then flew to New York City. So, like, luckily there's a huge time difference, but, I, you know, like, I was exhausted. But I felt like the match went really well, and it has been one of the things where, you know, I had my drug issues when I was at Ring of Honor, and I really wanted to have, you know, I didn't want my last appearance to be how people remembered me. So this was something that was, you know, fulfilling for me just on a personal note, you know. So, you know, being able to go out there and have a good match with Tommaso was, you know, I couldn't see how we would have a bad match because it was just such – the match kind of laid itself out, you know, because he's the new crown jewel and the original crown jewel, and that's all we had to go off of, you know, and it works so well.
And he showed the robe.
Yeah. It's funny because, like, he's so serious, too, you know what I mean? Like, he's, like, a no-nonsense guy, you know? So I just thought it was kind of fun to get to do something like that. And it's just, you know, like, we didn't have to go out there and kill each other or anything like that. And we didn't have to go and do 30-minute Broadway, you know. It's just, it was, the story was already there, and it's just, I don't know. I thought it was everything was kind of in perfect alignment then.
Brought up your issues with drugs, and, you know, we talked about the last time you were on the show, but what we really didn't get into at all, and I'm not sure if you were had this job then, but I certainly want to talk to you about it now. Being the director of the Barton County, Georgia Peer Support Wellness and Respite Center, part of the Georgia Mental Health Network, talk about that a little bit. And again, you talked a little bit about your other issues the last time you were on, but as far as the work you're doing now, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. We're part of the Georgia Mental Health Consumer Network, and so everybody there has a mental health diagnosis or addictive disease issues, and it was just one of those things where one of my counselors had said, and this is, people feed off of you a lot, you know, this might be something you can get into. And, you know, I decided to start going back to college, and I was going to try to get a teaching degree. And, you know, one day my counselor called me and was like, I just found out of this thing called a certified peer specialist, where the only way to be able to get the certification is to, you know, to have one of those diagnoses. So I went and took the next training, and then I passed the test, whatever. And then without even working a day, I saw a job opening in 15 minutes from my house, and I shot for the stars and tried to get the director's position, and luckily it worked out. So now, like, it's, you know, it's a very fulfilling job, you know.
They've been so supportive of me being able to go and do, like, the thing in India. And then, you know, I went back and did some stuff for TNA, too. So the thing that we have that, like, a doctor doesn't have is, like, lived experiences, you know. Like, a doctor can sit there and say, hey, this is what you need to do when you, you know, like, get out of rehab. You know, you need to go and do this and this and this, and that's how you'll stay clean, right? Well, that's easy for him to say if he's never had those issues, you know? And so, like, I have something that they can't learn in a book. And then on top of that, like, I get to show people, like, okay, like,
you know, you can hit, like, a rock bottom where I was with suicide attempts and things like that, and then come back and live life on your own term. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not wrestling now because it's the only thing I know how to do or the only way I know how to make money. You know, like, I wrestle now because it's still something I love to do, you know, but I don't have to be a slave to it like I used to be. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Were there, you know, you talked about with Ring of Honor and, you know, that not wanting to be your, you know, how people remembered your last performance there. Did you have any mental hurdles or anything, you know, as far as, you know, going back and facing, even though it's a little bit different than it was before, but, you know, facing a Ring of Honor crowd and dealing with, you know, the possibility of what could come out of your, you know, a New York crowd's mouth your way or anything like that? Were there any mental hurdles to overcome, you know, going into that?
I was worried about a reaction, but and then I started telling myself, like, you know what? This isn't for them so much as it is for you. And if it's feeling good for you, then it'll feel good for them. You know what I mean? Like, if you, and I believe if you wrestle with that sense of passion each time, that it'll shine through. And, you know, like, I went out there and I tried to have fun. You know, when you worked at Ring of Honor, when I was working there, it was, you know, Joe, AJ Styles, you know, all these guys that were just making huge names for themselves, you know, and there was a lot of pressure. And if you didn't work, you didn't get paid, you know. So it was one of those things where I was trying whatever I had to do to survive. But this time it was, I went back on my own terms, you know. Like, I wasn't beating down the door, like, trying to get an opportunity. They came to me and had this idea, and we sat around it for a while, and then when the time was right, you know, everything worked out. But, I really do feel like that's, you know, like, when people put so much emphasis on, I have to do this because, you know, because the fans want to see me do it, you know what I mean? Or because if, you know, if I go back out there, they might boo me, or, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if somebody's confident in their wrestling abilities, and they wrestle with a sense of passion, then all those things will work themselves out.
Wes?
Let me ask a question, since I wasn't on the last time you were on. Mm-hmm. What were your drugs of choice, Jimmy?
I took opiates and benzos. So I was doing a lot of Vicodin and Xanax.
Did that start from legitimate injury Was it true about your jaw, or was it just something picked up recreationally that ended up getting worse?
I had taken Vicodin here and there, but then when I broke my jaw, and Nigel and I still had like 5 weeks left of an angle that we had to do, and then the blow off was in England, so I wrestled with it broken for 5 weeks, and Nigel doesn't pat you when he's like clotheslining you, so it was one of those things where and then again, like wrestling had became my full time job at that point, so I needed to work to support my family. So it was just take as much as I could to numb myself enough to get through matches. But then after I got my jaw worked out and everything, I was just so unhappy with myself and how things were going, and my push kind of went to a screeching halt. And it was just a lot of me not dealing with issues that I had, growing up as a kid, too.
Do you want to talk about those issues, too? Because I think that we talked about them a little bit before, but obviously Les wasn't on there.
Mm-hmm.
The forum is yours as far as talking about those things, if you wish mm-hmm. to. And, obviously under the specter of the Sandusky thing at Penn State, under the guise of a foundation, which made it even worse, as far as your opinion on that and just as far as that story, and because it's, Mick Foley's done a great job with the Rain Foundation of Tori Amos's, but he's been one of the few voices that has actually come out to talk about molestation and rapes and things like that. You've come out and talking about it, and just for those who don't know, can you talk a little bit about that?
Okay. So my mother was an alcoholic, and she died when I was 17. She was 34, and I pretty much lived on my own until I was from the age of 15 on. And when I was 5 years old, I was sexually molested by my uncle, and nobody really believed me. And I took statements, they reported things. They even hypnotized me one time, just to make sure that I was telling everything the same. But by then he had became not a minor, he had become an adult, so the statute of limitations had passed. And then, my family's mentality was, okay, it's done and over with, let's just go on, and, nothing happened. And so, I never got... went and saw a counselor on a regular basis. I think I told when I was around 11, so it was about 6 years later. Those kind of things, growing up, is something that if you're just having to push it down and never deal with it, it one day it's just going to overflow. And I kept everything together for a long, long time, but it's just pressures with, raising my own family and life in general, the simple problems were what would mess with my head. But the Sandusky thing, it's, people don't understand how much it will haunt somebody. Even up to 2 months ago, I've only told a few of my close friends this, and that's the powerful thing about being able to come on these shows and have a decent following is every time I do one of these interviews, I get my Facebook messages or so many people are oh my God, you touched on something that's happened to me, blah, 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 blah. And we, I try to help them as much as I can. Even up to 2 months ago, I stayed up for 2 days straight trying to figure out whatever happened to my uncle. And it came out that in 1994, which was the year after I had told, he got a child molestation charge. And then he got out of jail after that. and then in 2006, got 8 counts of child molestation. When I was growing up, it was always, it's got to be your imagination, that didn't really happen. You know what I mean? So So that stuck with me for years. Like, maybe I did just imagine this, and I'm just being a, you know, like, I don't know, like, just have a vivid memory of something. But then when I read the news article, and it was a 5-year-old boy and a 3-year-old little girl, you know, it kind of validated what went on with me, you know what I mean? But, I mean, like, even those things creep up into my head now, like, you know, like, it's just, you know, like, why do I need that validation after all these years, you know what I mean? But, I needed it, and now I can kind of rest a little bit easier.
You know, let me ask you a question. You mentioned that when you told him about this, that you weren't believed. And I hear that story, you know, so often. Aside from the molestation itself, for you to try to mentally deal with, what was it like to realize you knew something had actually happened, and yet people, do you think that the people you told, their way of dealing with it was pretend that it didn't happen? Is that, I mean, the way they got through it, and which actually created more of a problem for you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the biggest ones was my grandmother. She didn't believe anything I told her, you know what I mean? And when I was about 13, I used to live in Washington State, and we moved back to Georgia. And that's when my mom started drinking really, really bad. And I ran away from home, and I was staying with my grandmother. And her stepson ended up having a whole bunch of stuff in his room that he shouldn't have, like some illegal things, and blamed it all on me. And I ended up going to the youth detention center for it. And then my parents weren't fit to take me, and she wasn't fit to, you know, keep me, excuse me. And so I ended up doing the next 90 days in a group home, you know. And, like,
right.
Here I am, like, playing baseball, you know, like, doing well in school, and, like, everything is just crashing down around me because of the people that are supposed to be there for the kids, you know what I mean? Like, kids, like, 13, 14, 15 years old aren't supposed to be doing life by itself, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I had to do that, and I had no other choice, and, so, like, there's a lot of stuff that, that I'm super, I still have issues with it, you know what I mean? Like, it took me a long time to be able to talk about these things. Like, I didn't tell my wife about the molestation until about 2 years ago. And, you know, like, now I tell thousands of people when I do these interviews, you know? And, but it helps me because, I'm not hiding anything. Like, now that my life's kind of more of an open book, that there's nothing really to numb right now. You know what I mean? I don't know. It's just a much different time than because I think my job is great because it holds me accountable. Like, I know if I ever, like, relapsed or anything like that, then all these people would be relying on me. But I also, on top of that, I get support all day long with my staff and with the peers that come into the center. You know, like, we're just there, you know, leaning on each other to get through this, you know? And, like, now, I mean, like, I get to do stuff, you know, with legislation and go and, you know, and make changes in laws and stuff like that. So, like, things like that, like, are what drive me now. And originally, like, the whole TNA thing, was originally going to get the certification to approach them about doing peers specialist stuff within their system because they don't offer rehabilitation for. I just looked at it some wrestler goes to TNA after working for WWE and then continues to use or gets caught using, and then WWE pays for their rehabilitation. It makes WWE look like the babyface, you know? But if they had somebody there just all the time, like on the road with the guys and just there to be supportive of them, I didn't even have to wrestle, you know, just somewhere like I knew what it would be like to be at 3 o'clock in the morning in your room eating handfuls of pills, you know what I mean? So I knew where they were coming from.
how do you when you see guys like that, is there a way for them to come to you, or how do you walk the line as far as, you know, with your experiences and the things that you've gone to, and obviously, you know, working Rampage and doing the stuff there, and as far as seeing any guys that may go down that path, do you approach them, or would it be, you know, more of them kind of coming to you, or just because there's all, you know, guys who have had different issues, and some preach and some sit back and just, you know, offer advice here and there. If a guy was going down that path that you were going down, how do you approach them? What do you do? And I know it's a heck of a hypothetical to give you, but in a business where there are so many problems, and they start, you know, with guys unknowingly, you know, well, no, I'm just feeling good, having a good time, and, you know, hey, you know, you can't happen to me, but it can. I mean, are you going to jump in, or how do you approach a situation like that?
I think it depends on my relationship with the person. I mean, there's definitely guys that I have a closer relationship that I would reach out to them a little bit more. But, you know, like, I also, one of the things that for me was that I hadn't really heard anybody, like, hit a rock bottom, or, you know, like, their struggles and how it was like, you know. So, like, I feel like doing things like this kind of opens my door. And like I said, after I did Lagania's podcast, like my email and my Facebook was just like, it took me like 3 days to reply to all of the people that were, you know, saying like, I've gone through similar things and I'm in the same business as you and things like that. And you know, like I think it's cool when I was over there with guys that are, you know, have great careers, and they were, you know, talking to me about, you know, some of their struggles and where they're at now and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, so, it's really, you know, and I don't hold my, like, I'm not any better than anybody else. You know what I mean? Like, for example, like I volunteer at a methadone clinic that I used to go to. When I tried to get off, I relapsed because my appendix ruptured. And so I started going to this methadone clinic, and I just hated it there, you know? And I was like, I don't want this in my life, blah, blah, blah. So, like, when I go back there, you know, at first they were like, you know, like, what could you even offer us? And then after I got my certification, they were like, okay. And then especially after our center opened, then they saw it more of a, okay, we can offer support for our patients, whatever. But now I go back and do, like, a relapse prevention group there. And I, like, the day that I went and spoke to the staff, I said, you know, you guys have a relapse prevention group. Like, so how many of you guys have actually relapsed on anything or know how to prevent a relapse, you know, that didn't come out of a manual or a textbook, you know what I mean? Like, and that's why people it's much different. When they offered me to do the class, they wanted me to come in through the employee's entrance. And I was like, you guys didn't let me come in that when I was a patient here, you know. The whole point of peer support is that we're peers and we're on the same level, you know. Like, why should I come in a different door than the people that I'm talking to? You know, like, when I go to work, you know, I'm dressed very casual, like T-shirt and jeans. And, you know, all of my staff are much older, or not much older, but older than me. And so, you know, when I say, hey, I'm the director, it kind of catches people off guard because I look like just another dude there, you know. But that's helpful in the whole process, because I kind of feel like if I go in there in a suit and tie, there's already going to be a power struggle. You know, like, they're already going to say, like, oh, he's able to do this and this and this. And it shouldn't be like that.
Les?
No, I'm listening. I'm interested. I mean, I'm engrossed in what he's saying. Go ahead, Mike.
I don't know. Obviously, we've had you on for a while now. I don't want to hold you all night. If you can, I would love for you to come back on, because again, yours is a story that needs to be told, and I'm glad that you have become comfortable, you know, through multiple channels, but through ones like this, to get your word out, because, you know, it was one of the things, you know, after the Sandusky thing happened, again, I go back to Mick Foley and the Rain Foundation and what he did, and, it took that for a lot of people to go and come out and tell their story and realize that they do have somebody on their side, and it did happen to other people. And it's something that it's just, I'm very happy for you that you have reached, you know, a level of peace now, even though it's a continued struggle and fight. And I am very happy that you would be willing to tell these stories on here, because it's just, you're doing a, obviously it's a service for yourself too, but it's a great, great service for everybody else. And I would love to have you back on to talk a lot more about, you know, some of the headaches and struggles you probably have to go through with funding and the clinic and the whole nine yards, plus obviously, you know, Rampage and the whole nine yards. And until you come back and actually host a show on this network again, I'd love to have you back on here.
Yeah, totally.
I want to echo that, what Mike just said as well. You know that you've got your life together and that you're helping others. I think that's marvelous, amazing, and tremendous that you're willing to do that. With my sense of humor, though, one of the things I've got to say that I heard you say is when I talk to Nigel, I'm going to say, Jimmy Ray said, you're stiff, and I taught you to work, you English asshole. What's up with that?
Yeah.
I wanted to bust out during there. Yeah, Nigel learned all his good potato skills from Les.
I used to make the joke. I was like, why can't I get European Nigel? You know what I mean? Like, because he went from, you know, doing the cute European Johnny Saint stuff to, like, he goes to know for a few times, and like now, like I'm fighting for my life every night. he's amazing though. I love him to death.
And going to be on here next week as well. And Jimmy again, thank you so much for coming on. And if this is possible, yes, Jimmy Rave. He's Jimmy Rave approved. You're in Georgia wrestling history.
Jimmy, the best of luck to you, my friend. God bless you, and take care of yourself.
All right, thanks, Les. You too.
Hey, thanks, Jimmy. Good night.
Thanks, Mike.
We'll be back after this break. I almost said Georgia wrestling history again, so some things are hard to break. Ringside Rap. Les Thatcher and Mike Sempervivi will be right back.
Hi, I'm Susanna.
And this is Debbie from the Bangles.
For Rad. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving.
What does it mean to be a designated driver?
It actually takes guts and shows you care about your friends. After all, their lives are in your hands.
So why don't you and your friends take it in turns to be the designated driver when you go out? You'll make the road safer for all of us.
A public service message brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
One second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Lots of experts talk about the ways that schools should inspire students to be creative. How you doing? I'm John Prime. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math or their English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. There you'll find kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff such as fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy just waiting to be explored by young minds. So don't let it go to waste. Support your school music program. Thank you.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound education.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
Hey, parents, it's hard to pick up your kids nowadays without embarrassing them.
Hi, honey.
Mom, not in front of my friends.
Well, kiss the embarrassment goodbye with OMGPS. OMGPS is a state-of-the-art navigation system that tells you exactly how far away you need to park when you pick up your kids.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
But she's not at the food court. She's at the movie theater.
Exactly. OMGPS comes with patented preteen reasoning technology to pinpoint precise pickup locations and minimize embarrassment.
In 100 yards, turn off the oldies music.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoes. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoes. Well, you can knock me down, in my face, slander my name all over the place, and do anything that you want to do, but honey, lay off of my shoes, and don't you step on my blue suede shoes. You can do anything, but lay off of my blue suede shoes.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Rap, Les Thatcher and Mike Sempervivi, and I had a epiphany there in the last break. I realized that in the time I've been being the main host of this show with Rich taking the seat behind the glass, I have been saying, well, this is Mike Sempervivi and Les Thatcher, and I just realized how incredibly moronic and stupid that is. So let me get this properly said. Les Thatcher, and I'm Mike Sempervivi.
Thank you. Age before beauty, right?
Not to rehash me, just want to thank Jimmy Ray for coming on. And again, the service that he does by telling his story is, that's a big deal. And it's, I don't think anybody realizes how big of a deal it is to, like he said, just get someone to listen to you and for you to get it out. And then to go and tell the world the story, I mean, it takes a set to do, and I'm really happy that he's doing it. Now, to talk about it a little bit, teased it earlier on in the show, UFC on Fox 2, the UFC ran their first two-hour show on Fox. This was going to be the official first show until the heavyweight title match came into the picture in December, I believe it was, or October, late October. Les, did you have a chance to see any of it on Saturday night?
Yeah, you know what pisses me off is I'm a Rashad Evans fan, and I fell asleep before the damn match, and I never thought to set my DVR because I was, you know, I was going to watch the whole thing because I didn't have, you know, didn't have to get up early or anything, and doze off, and I thought, Christ, I missed it and didn't set the DVR, but I don't know what the ratings are like. I haven't read anywhere. the matches were, well, kind of there. The one, you know, but the crew at the desk, Randy and Jones, with Metafee, they just weren't real comfortable. But then, you know, I got to think, well, this is not Howie and Terry and, you know, or Boomer. And, you know, they haven't worked together. And I think that has to be established. You know, looking at it from somebody that's worked the desk, right? I mean, you know, it didn't flow. But, you know, I hope it flies. Now you said it wasn't a good show, and I'd be interested in why you didn't think it was a solid show.
Well, you know, and the ratings ended up being pretty darn good. It 2.6 rating, 4.7 million viewers. If you include the Spanish feed, which, you know, the Spanish demographic was huge, obviously, for Cain Velasquez in the last fight on Fox against Junior Dos Santos. But, you know, it bumps up to 5.2 million when you include that demo. And, yeah, it wasn't as great as the last one, but obviously, you know, that was a bigger deal on a special occasion. But I think for the 2 hours that they got in the demographics, where obviously, you know, Fox is looking, you know, 18 to 49 males, 18 to 34, and 34 to 49 males, which were strong. And that's really, at the end of the day, what they were looking for. And it gave the UFC some breathing room, I think, because of the show, which, you know, leading into it, my biggest problem was, boy, you're really risking some stuff here. You know, for the last 10 months, this whole thing was going to be Rashad Evans and John Jones. And for a lot of different reasons here and there, injuries to Davis, injuries to Evans, you know, injuries to Jones, all this sort of stuff, it hasn't come to pass. And they were taking a risk, putting Rashad Evans in there with Phil Davis. Same thing when it comes to Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva. That's one of your big, you know, with GSP being out and with Lesnar not going to be around, or Cain Velasquez for that matter, who's going to draw your money on pay-per-view? Man, those two fights, you know, putting those into harm's way were really terrible. And then Michael Bisping being on the show was like, well, God, if you're going to do Bisping and Sonnen and have them on the same show, at least have them fight their, you know, each other, so you get some sort of, you know, in case Bisping does win, you have something to at least come out of it, because his mouth will, if for no other reason, you know, that alone get people interested with him and Silva, and you might be able to salvage something that you had with Sonnen and Silva. But what ended up happening is we got Sonnen and Bisping because Mark Munoz got hurt and couldn't fight Chael Sonnen, and he ended up getting Chris Weidman bumped up to the main card against Damian Maia, and that was a mistake. What they should have done in that scenario, Maia has not been the same fighter since Nate Marquardt knocked him out in 21 seconds a couple of years ago. He just has not been the same guy. And him and Bisping, it was going to be good because, you know, Bisping was going to carry that from a promotion point of view and a fight point of view. Well, once that fight fell out and Bisping got bumped up to Sonnen, they really should have thought about putting the heavyweight fight that was onto that main show with Joey Beltran, the Mexicutioner, and LeVar Johnson, because that was 99% chance somebody was getting knocked out. And I think they should have went with that move for the first, you know, fight of the show, because Bisping and Sonnen ended up being, you know, Bisping's takedown defense for a British guy, that's one thing he has come along on, was realizing that, you know, amateur American wrestling is something I need to know. And he was able to neutralize Sonnen. And from what some people thought, won the fight. I didn't believe so. But it was not a good showcase for Chael Sonnen, who obviously a lot of the promotion was built around, and his mouth.
Except for the promo.
Well, that's the whole thing. The 1975, you know, he's over from California. Superstar Billy Graham is here to fight Bruno. His ability to stay lucid after a fight like that and bust out that promo was kind of interesting. It was actually amazing to me. And that
was
fantastic.
I know everybody said it's Billy Graham, you know, but as far as UFC's concerned, it wasn't anybody's promo, right?
So he made it his own, which was great, but the problem was the promo far outshone, you know, his fight, and for the average
sports
guy, absolutely.
I'm 100% behind you there. again, I never have considered myself a judge of MMA or even qualified to, but I do believe he won the third round.
Oh, Sonnet. Absolutely. Yes.
Without fail. I think, you know, I think in the first couple it could have gone either way. But, yeah, the third round was his. There's no doubt about it.
I had Sonnen winning the first, Bisping with the second. And, you know, I couldn't have, if it was a unanimous decision for Bisping, I would have been a little surprised. But it was hard to argue, depending on the prism you were looking through, that, you know, I could see how, you know, I wouldn't have, you know, gone out to the bell tower and started shooting if somebody announced Bisping had won the fight, although I would have expected Dana White to do that if that would have happened. Because you can still get, you know, money out of Bisping and Silva, but really, obviously, everything is leading towards Chael, who in the lead up to this, you know, was cutting promos left and right and calling on being a pro wrestling fan and carrying around a fake UFC title belt just to rub it in a little bit more. And, you know, Nick Diaz is another one. Look, you don't need 10 of these guys, but you need at least one of these guys in your promotion. And, you know, at least his mouth carried the weight there. And because of that, well, you know, for any of the, you know, negativity of this performance, leading into a fight with Anderson Silva, it's going to be, he's still going to be able to talk people into it. Now, Jones and Evans, on the other hand, you know, every fight fan wants to see this. It will get some crossover appeal too. But, you know, probably to the mainstream sports fan watching, as you said, they weren't comfortable in that booth. And that's really no fault of anybody, because it was Couture's first time in there with Menifee, and Dana White has made it clear that they're probably going to have a rotating guy in there as the third wheel. You know, and again, not everyone is Chael Sonnen, so, you know, you can have charisma and be a good guy, but some people are just not great with a mic, and if they are great with a mic, it's not easy to be with somebody yelling in your ear and everything going on for, you know, an hour-long show. So he didn't come across too dynamic, and Rashad, because of his performance, didn't get a chance to cut the kind of promo that makes people hate him, because the people hate Rashad Evans. He's too pretty. He's dressed too nice. He's this, he's that. People in the UFC, there's a lot of UFC fans that hate Rashad Evans, and he's great at playing into that. But,
well, you know, the thing with Sonnen, I told somebody after watching it, I said, you know, I wish some of the people in wrestling and professional wrestling would take a lesson. And they said, what's the lesson? I said, the lesson is you're serious between the bells and you become a clown afterwards, not in the middle of a match. You know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves, I guess. And, you know, it's not just the independents, but, you know, the Dolph Ziggler syndrome, I guess you'd call it. You know, I got to get my shit in, my clown act
shit,
in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I was kind of surprised, because I had never seen Sonnet before. And then in the promo, you know, I wasn't expecting it, so it just blew me away. And then I saw on the different websites, there, well, you know, he stole this from Billy Graham. Well, you know, as far as if you're a UFC fan or an MMA fan, I guess I should say, and you're not a professional wrestling fan, as far as they're concerned, didn't steal from anybody. You know, I mean, but then I thought, okay, you know, in that vein, when was the last original thing that you've seen in professional wrestling?
Exactly.
You know, what's your point here?
Yeah, it's like the promotion of these things. I mean, you think Jack Johnson, I mean, with two stuff. I mean, everybody, it's look, if there's a reason for all of these hundreds of years, it's been a canvas mat with ropes around it. It's the promotion to get people involved and get them talking and getting, whether it's paid to see the other guy beat you up or they're paying to see you get beat up and shut up. It's just, you know, it's amazing to see the hardcore UFC fans and the guys who, you know, because I go to, you know, having the ability to have press credentials for these shows, you know, you talk to a lot of fans, and I love hearing those guys who are big amateur wrestling fans, and boy, they hate Kurt Angle. Boy, I hate that guy for what he did. but they love, you know, certain wrestlers, like guys, Mark Coleman. God, Mark Coleman wrestled, you know, pro wrestling in Japan and had a worked fight in Pride that's actually on the record books with Takada. And look at your amateur trophy that you were wrestling for. Whose name's on that? Oh, yeah, Danny Hodge. It's always amazing to hear the vitriol that spit over a guy like Chael Sonnen who would do a promo like that. But when, you know, the whole reason anyone's interested in Chael is, like, he wrestles two decisions. He has had losses in big fights. You know, it's not – he's had two impressive performances. You know, the Anderson Silva fight that he was winning for 4.5 rounds against a guy that people thought was a cyborg or turning into one. And then they had, you know, the fight right after that where he caught Brian Stan in a choke. But, you know, outside of those two performances, there's nothing on Chael Sonnen's resume that really gives him the opportunity and deserves him the chance to be as noted as he is, except for that mouth. So, you know, who's the dummy here and who's getting work here for everyone that's so, you know, upset over that type of stuff? Well, how can you blame Chael Sonnen?
Well, you know, I kind of got into this a few weeks ago. Posturing trash talking in professional sports has become, you know, a part of the framework of those things, but at the opportune time. And so it's not, to me, it's not unexpected, you know. But those guys are, all those things are shoots, they realize that they can't do it in the middle of a game, you know, or during a play. You know, after you score a basket or after you score a touchdown, you can do that, but you can't do it in the midst of the game. And again, if I were in control of creative in WWE or TNA, that would be one of the things I'd put a stop to. Is it a major thing? No, but it's a detail, and it's more apt to give your audience a chance to actually get emotionally invested because they, again, like I mentioned about Helmsley walking away from Taker on Monday night, it gives them a reason to question, is there some legitimate heat here? I thought that, going back to Monday night, I thought, you know, God love him, John Cena gets more corny by the minute. First of all, he had to have music to come out to save poor Eve, who is beautiful, but a horrible actress. I think, why are you sitting there? Get the hell up and run. You know, no, I can't. This is part of the show. Oh, okay. Well, now I know why you're sitting there.
She's gorgeous, and they're wasting her that way, but two, she goes out with a Gracie, and she's adept at Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I'm taking her over Kane.
Okay. But, you know, the whole thing with Cena after the savage beating of Kane and Kane running away, he had to – are we having fun tonight or something? What? Excuse me? I mean, it's just – wow. And we wonder why people, you know – And the company continually playing off of that, they like John Cena. Do you hate John Cena? Is that really the point?
Yeah.
You know, it's the point on Sunday night is, do you hate Tom Brady? Do you like Tom Brady? It doesn't matter. Tom Brady is a surgeon, and if his offensive line gives him enough time, he'll find ways to score touchdowns. You know, it's funny with that company. They're grasping that Cena, you know, is basically split with the fan base, and now after he's been that way for how many years, they're trying to find a way to make money off of it or to play off of it. And yet, how many times do you see things happen that they should roll with, is basically like rolling with a punch and go with it, and they absolutely don't because they know what you want. I thought, Jesus, it's you know, it's frightening what's happened to the business. I mean, it honestly is.
Brian and Dave were talking about on Monday, one of the things that, you know, people responded well towards you or a little bit better towards Cena at the end of that thing because, you know, finally somebody chased Kane away and it's like, okay, I disagree with that because it's, again, been the third time in the last, oh, I don't know, maybe 9 months that he was pissed off or at least, it, you know, initially was kicking some ass. That's how you get people to respond to John Cena in a positive fashion. You just have him kick some ass, and they don't do that. It wasn't because Kane was running away or he saved the girl or any of that stuff. No, they like seeing him actually beat people up every once in a while. That's okay to do. And it's the thing that they keep missing here over and over and over again. And then I'm going over and over again here, and which means I've gone over the time for the break, which is making Rich very, very upset. So
we wouldn't want Rich to have cardiac arrest.
No, we would not. But we'll be back talking a little bit more of old school stuff here when we return on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire,
formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Les Thatcher here alongside me, Mike Sempervivi, and as I teased before the last break,
to make a note to the Empire. Get somebody to cut your promo that's got some fire.
For me, I need a little more
I'm
fire.
Sorry, I've been wanting to say that for a couple of weeks, and I thought, oh, Les, you're a heel as it is, go ahead, say it, and get it over with. And
I tell you, I'm not used to going in and out of break with these things. I'm still getting used to this here, but tomorrow night, actually, on the show with Mike Norris, Jerry Oates, and Bobby Simmons, they're going to be talking a little bit of old school TV, the early days of TV, and they're going to focus on Chicago and Hollywood and Texas. So I don't want to steal their thunder too much here, but Les, obviously, you know, your roots come out of that time, if I'm not mistaken, of Indianapolis and everything. Talk a little bit about those early days as far as, you know, coming out of the colder age of TV and Barnett in Indianapolis, that sort of thing. What are your memories of that time? And as far as how that kind of blew up and took itself into different directions in the the national TV subsided, the local TV grew. Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, you know, wrestling was phenomena in the late 40s and early 50s because it was concentrated action in the middle of that ring. Network television jumped on it, right? We saw two shows out of Chicago, two out of New York, Hollywood Legion Stadium, Texas Wrestling. Dayton, a studio wrestling out of Dayton, WLWD in Dayton, studio wrestling out of WLWT in Cincinnati. Columbus had it in WLWC, but we didn't get to see it here. And then when I first saw wrestling, it was live from Music Hall on Friday. It was a beer company sponsored on Friday nights from Music Hall. Then the regional stuff picked up, and it was rough sometimes. When I first went to work for Barnett, Joe Blanchard was doing the. Oh, no, I take that back. I can't remember the guy who was actually started doing the TV in Indianapolis, but Joe later did it. There was a local guy here in Cincinnati at that time. We were on WCPO Channel 9. And at that time, your announcers were not, until I went to Atlanta in 66. Well, I guess Cottle was doing Raleigh TV in 63. But I honestly, at that point, I was more concerned with wrestling. I wasn't paying that close attention to the to the television end of the business, other than I was, you know, if I got a chance to be on it and wrestle, I was more concerned with, you know, with getting my, establishing myself as a wrestler. But I guess I first noticed with Ed Caprell in Atlanta in 66 that it was more than just a local kiddie show host or, weatherman or somebody getting it $25 to be the host. In a lot of cases, Mike, they were more engrossed in being entertaining themselves than they were, you know, crazy enough. Some of those guys took the money, but they didn't want to really be associated with wrestling as such. So, they sort of were tongue-in-cheek, you know, even though the wrestling itself wasn't or the wrestlers themselves were not. So, I guess Cottle to a little degree, I was obviously more engrossed in Bob when I went back there in 67 to Charlotte. But Ed Caprell in 66 in Atlanta was, you know, the first guy that I noticed was a little more serious. But then to me, what actually made me want to do wrestling television was Gordon when I went to Tampa in 67 I'd never heard a wrestling announcer be that serious about the business, and it was tough sometimes with some of these local guys, like I say, the local weatherman or something, because they wanted to be glib when you were trying to be serious with an interview, and so you almost had to ignore them. As you know, whatever they might say something, you know, to try to, you know, to get themselves over to a certain degree. And you just had to act like you didn't hear that and go on past it because you didn't work with them because they were not smart. Now, whether they were or not, you know, is obviously questionable. When I first started sitting in on televisions in the United States in 1971 in Charlotte and High Point and so forth, it was basically that I knew the angle, I knew what was going to happen on TV, and and even the promotion was under the assumption that the guys doing the announcing were not. Big Bill Ward in Charlotte had been there for like, God, I don't know how long. You know, you had to figure that he maybe figured something out on his own. I've never talked to Bob Cottle about this, and maybe I will someday and ask him if it crosses my mind, but I get the feeling that, you know, after he had been part of the Raleigh show for so many years that he, you know, had a little feel for, you know, for what it might be. But you didn't really talk to anybody about it. You didn't actually open up to them. And I know Freddie Miller, who actually never did television, but during the war in Atlanta, because he was, you know, doing the promos and stuff, was frustrated that when the office door would be shut, he was on the other side of it, you know. And I know he commented to me one time that, you know, in essence, that I know what's, you know, something's going on. And it's just that it was such a closed shop that instead of directing your commentators toward making them valuable in terms of helping you get your angles over, you were afraid to. And in some instances, I totally agree that it would not have been good business to smarten them up, because then they would have had to run off and tell her, you know, this is all a show. So it was. It wasn't I started to say the sophisticated product it is now, and it's not the sophisticated product now that it was. I feel that when I actually got on, you know, started doing play by play and color, that I was blessed with the opportunity to work with a crew. The group of us, Lance, Russell, Bob, myself, Gordon, Ed Caprell, I think we made a nucleus of what was a good, you know, I mean, that we tried to sell the product and sell it legitimately and seriously, and we're not concerned with, you know, we didn't wear funny jackets, or we didn't, you know, necessarily try to get ourselves over. That the whole thing was to what we did get over was, and I should say Jim Ross, I forgot to add Jim in there, and God, I can't do that. Was that we earned credibility by selling the product. You know, that was how we got over because, you know, you're talking about having Nigel on next week. That's something he and I talked about a couple months ago. We had lunch here. He was in the area for a while, and we got together and had lunch. And I said, of course, he wouldn't know Johnny Carson from a hole in the wall. But one of the things that comparisons is, you know, a lot of the advertisers on The Tonight Show when Carson was there had Carson do their commercial, because the feeling was that if Johnny Carson said it was good, it was good. You know, if he said you should eat this cookie, then people are going to go out and try that cookie, or should use this bleach in your washer, then they're going to use that bleach in their washer. And I think that's the credibility that was lacking in a lot of the wrestling commentators of the 50s and into the 60s, and where the boys actually, and the stories, the angles, as we call them, the boys and the angles had to get the show over itself, because the announcers were maybe the weak link. And that didn't change until later into the 60s. And then finally, you know, into the 70s, where there was more of us than there was of them, I guess, you know, is the best way to put it. So
we got about 5 minutes left, but I want to add, since you're talking about, you know, some of the guys who were poor, I remember like watching on tapes and like newsreel type footage of announcers using like the sound effects and things like that. Was that stuff that was dubbed over later, or were there territories, to your knowledge, in TV shows where you actually had the wood block clocked when a guy got hit in the head, and that sort of, you know, ape forward?
Well, you know, there were guys, I don't, the only sound effects that I remember, Mike, was Dennis James in New York cracking his knuckles,
Okay.
Next to the microphone, you know, to give that effect. And realize this when I say that, is that back then, like in the 60s, there were no DVRs or VCRs. So chances are we weren't going to see the show that we were on, you know.
Yeah.
Because we were working or on the road or, you know, in a car or going somewhere. So we didn't get a chance to watch our own programming. I know one of the reasons, Big Jim Hess in Knoxville was John Kazana's announcer, and Jim and I socialized, and I like Jim, but Jim and I, you warped your head off hold, was any hold. I mean, that was just something that If Jim didn't know a name, it was your warp your head off hold. And and as you know, I felt a little uncomfortable when Ron bought the territory. One of the things was to phase Jim out, not because Jim was a bad person or not because Ron had a personal issue, but he was going to put me in the driver's seat there on the microphone because he knew I was going to sell the product seriously and give it, you know, and try to give it legitimacy and respect, opposed to, you know, warp your head off hold. And well, it was like Bill Ward and Charlotte. One of my jobs when I sat in with Bill on Wednesday nights was to, if he was in the midst of wishing Fannie Mae Jones in Concord a happy 98th birthday in the middle of a hot angle, that I was going to step on him verbally, you know, and direct everyone's eye, you know, eyes toward that angle and give it some credence, you know, because again, I mean, which wasn't a problem, you know, a lot of the, you know, we want to, you got a note from Fannie Mae Jones in Concord, North Carolina. She's celebrating her 98th birthday this, you know, and it might be at a critical part of the match. But again, he was selling the personality that he had sold on that station in other, you know, in other types of shows. It wasn't necessarily him selling wrestling. He was, you know, he was selling himself to a certain degree.
And Les, it's time for you to sell yourself here with any plugs and.
All right. Well, I haunt houses and do wrestling training. You reach me at Les Thatcher at EPW. Les, or not Les Thatcher, Les at EPWT.com. Just did almost a 2-hour block with Mike Johnson and Stu Carapola on Insider today. That's up there. Saturday it's going to be Will Strauss and I. Vic's not going to be on the show with us Saturday on Observer next Wednesday here. I'll be in Mobile for Wrestlers Reunion the 2nd and 3rd of March, and I'll be at Cauliflower Alley in Vegas at the Gold Coast Casino and Hotel. That's April 16th, 17th, and 18th.
I have nothing that good. That is the only thing I got is working with Brian Alvarez this Sunday for a show no one will listen to. Wrestling the Server live on the Sports Byline Radio Network, 6 to 8 on Sunday. I don't know what you'll be doing, but I have a feeling you won't be listening to Observer live. But
this Sunday I'll be glued to my TV, so. Hoping that Tom Brady wins Super Bowl number 4 and puts him in a class with Bradshaw and Montana.
He's terrifyingly scary. God, he is scary. Absolutely. Although, you know, Eli Manning in these situations is scary too. So I could not be any happier that we ended up with this matchup as opposed to San Francisco and Baltimore, which, no offense to either one of those teams, I love defense and everything. But the thought of 2 weeks of the Harbaughs leading up to a 6-3 1970 type Super Bowl, I was not looking forward to that. Now, I wonder if Rich actually wants to pop on here with his Super Bowl prediction. I wonder. I'm going to actually say, believe it or not, even though I, for some reason, think the Patriots are going to win by about 20 points, because Brady, I mean, for some reason, just all the media attention is on the Giants. I'm actually going to pick the Giants 27-24, although, again, this sounds terrible, that I think the Patriots could win this game 30-10, too, and I wouldn't be too surprised.
Well, you know, I won't pick a score, but you know, they talk about the weakness of the Patriots' defense, but they stepped up against the Ravens. They legitimately did. And like I say, you give Brady the surge of time to throw, he'll find a way to win a football game. I mean, I'm not necessarily a Patriots fan, but I'm very much a Tom Brady fan. I think he's tremendous. So I hope they win. I won't pick a score. I don't. And you know what? It may be close, but I'd like to see them win the rematch.
Is it Rich not going to pop on here, but did want me to let everyone know that he's pulling for the Pats, but thinks the Giants are going to win. So, oh, yeah, I should also mention, you know, as I said earlier on the show, too, Adam Summers and I did a big audio nightmare. We'll probably be doing another one here really, really soon under just because of the fact New Japan Pro Wrestling, which I talk about a lot, was actually sold by the Ukes company, and Dave Meltzer talks about a lot in this edition of The Observer. And we're going to be following up on that as well. So I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. I'd like to thank Jimmy Rave again, and again, reminding everyone to come next week. Nigel McGuinness is going to be on this show, and I'm not going to have to say a word, which will make everyone happy.
We have to find out why he's so damn stiff when he works with Jimmy, too.
Well, Les, thank you very much, sir, and look forward to hearing
you
on Saturday on the Observer Show, and we'll talk to you next week and talk to everybody else next week as well.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.